I'd like to ask everyone to take their seats, please. I think you're ready to start for the next presentation. Thank you. Next up, we have Altria presenting this morning, and I'd like to thank Altria for its sponsorship of CAGNY over the years, and especially for dinner tonight. This is one of those nights we're really glad they own a wine business. So thank you, Altria, in advance for dinner tonight. So I'd like to introduce Marty Barrington, the Chairman and CEO, and I'll add soon to be President of the company. And CFO Howard Willard is here as well, along with other management executives. Marty's presided over a period of very strong growth for the business and stability in its earnings growth. 2015 looks to continue the momentum in the business with strong expected growth in its smokable segment and its continued investment in some new innovative products. So let me turn over to Marty now to tell you more about the strategy. Marty.
So good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for the introduction, Chris. I have to tell you, it's a very great pleasure to be back at CAGNY and with all of you. Several members of our management team joined me this morning, including Howard Willard, Dave Brand, Billy Gifford, and Murray Garnick. And in case you didn't hear the news, Dave will be retiring after 38 extraordinary years with the company. On March 1st, Howard will succeed Dave as Chief Operating Officer, and Billy will become Chief Financial Officer. We'll all be available during the question and answer portion of this morning. And as Chris has pointed out, we're hosting dinner this evening, which will be a great opportunity to spend some time together with us and with other members of the management team we've brought with us. As usual, before we begin, please review the Safe Harbor Statement and the forward-looking and cautionary statement section in today's press release for a description of the various factors that could cause our actual results to differ materially from projections included in today's remarks. Reconciliations and further explanations of the non-GAAP financial measures we discussed today are available on altria.com. 2014 was a very strong year for Altria and its shareholders, and we believe that Altria continues to be a terrific investment. Let's take a quick look at 2014. We grew adjusted diluted earnings per share 8%. We grew our dividend 8.3% and paid shareholders $3.9 billion in dividends. The smokable product segment grew adjusted operating companies' income 6.7%. Marlboro achieved record retail share of 43.8%, larger than the next 10 brands combined. Copenhagen and Skoal combined achieved record retail share since the UST acquisition of 51.2%, and we delivered total shareholder return of over 34%. We're very pleased with these results, and we're very proud of our talented employees who produced them. Of course, Altria wasn't strong just in 2014, for it has a remarkably strong track record of consistently delivering for our shareholders. So today we'll discuss with you our long-term financial goals, strategies, performance, and our outlook for 2015. Our first long-term financial goal is to grow adjusted diluted EPS at an average annual rate of 7% to 9%. And since 2009, we've done just that, growing at a compounded annual rate of 8%. Our second long-term goal is to maintain a target dividend payout ratio of approximately 80% of adjusted diluted EPS. We remain focused on returning cash to shareholders through our strong and growing dividend. Altria's dividend payout ratio is the highest in the S&P Food, Beverage, and Tobacco Index. We're proud to say we've increased the dividend 48 times in the past 45 years. And over the past 5 years, our annualized dividend has grown at a compounded annual rate of 8.9%. We pursue three strategies in order to deliver against these financial goals. Our first is to maximize income from our core tobacco businesses over the long term. The second is to grow new income streams with innovative tobacco products. And our third strategy is to manage our diverse income streams and strong balance sheet to deliver consistent financial performance. For context, let's compare Altria in terms of profitability, productivity, and performance to the S&P's beverage and food indices. Doing so shows that using the most recent comparable 12-month data, Altria's net income margins were up to 2.5 times wider. Altria is extremely efficient, resulting in average net revenues per employee up to 3 times higher. Free cash flow as a percentage of net revenues was also up to 3 times higher. And Altria's 5-year total shareholder return substantially outperformed beverage and food returns. Altria operates within an attractive domestic tobacco industry. Our business benefits from generally low input costs and little currency exposure, which help to support continued growth of the U.S. tobacco profit pool. Over the past 5 years, we estimate that the U.S. tobacco profit pool grew at a compounded annual rate of 5.5% to nearly $15.5 billion. And in 2014, Altria gained more than half of that profit pool through our tobacco company's strong positions across cigarettes, smokeless tobacco, and machine-made large cigars. As we noted, our first strategy is to maximize income from our core tobacco businesses over the long term. Let's begin with our smokable product segment, which includes cigarettes and machine-made large cigars. The strategy for this segment is to maximize income while maintaining modest share momentum on Marlboro and Black & Mild over time. In 2014, the cigarette category exhibited stable fundamentals supported by a relatively calm excise tax and regulatory environment. Philip Morris USA estimates that adjusted industry volume declined 3.5%, consistent with the long-term decline trend of 3% to 4%. PM USA performed very well against that backdrop. The smokable product segment delivered 6.7% adjusted operating company's income growth and expanded adjusted OCI margins by almost 2 percentage points. From 2009 to 2014, adjusted OCI grew at a compounded annual rate of 4.5%, and adjusted OCI margins expanded 7 percentage points. Our profit model in the smokable product segment depends primarily on 3 key factors: pricing, cost management, and the remarkable Marlboro brand. PM USA's pricing was a strong growth contributor in 2014. Net revenues per 1,000 units grew 5.1%, a bit ahead of the compounded annual growth rate of 4.4% since 2009. PM USA uses several tools to achieve its objectives. For example, in 2014, it took 2 cigarette pricing actions totaling 13 cents per pack. Additionally, PM USA took measured steps in select geographies to lower promotions behind some Marlboro offerings. PM USA reduced special price promotions on Marlboro Special Blend in scores of states, and while the reductions varied, they averaged 13 cents per pack. Additionally, PM USA invested modestly in some of its highly profitable portfolio brands to enhance overall mix. PM USA also steadily emphasizes cost management. In the smokable product segment, while controllable costs per 1,000 units increased about 3% last year, they've held virtually flat since 2009. Additionally, the end of the federal tobacco quota buyout payments will reduce the cost of goods sold by approximately $300 million versus 2014. PM USA has invested steadily to strengthen Marlboro, and those investments are paying dividends. Today, at almost 44 retail share points, Marlboro is larger than the next 10 cigarette brands combined, and it is the largest brand in every state. PM USA established a new Marlboro architecture in 2012 featuring 4 unique flavor families, red, gold, green, and black, to enhance the brand's momentum and relevance. To better understand how the architecture comes to life, we'll take a closer look at 2 of the Marlboro flavor families with strong demographics among adult smokers 21 to 29, beginning with Marlboro Black. The Marlboro Black family is a prime example of how the architecture has added dimension to the brand for both loyal and competitive adult smokers. With its bold personality, Marlboro Black has enhanced Marlboro's position among adult smokers 21 to 29 and contributed to innovation with Marlboro NXT and Marlboro Edge. In addition to its retail presence and vivid packaging, Marlboro Black engages smokers 21 and older through tailored direct mail and digital communications and adult-only experiences at the Marlboro Black Lounge. Innovation and expanded use of adult smoker engagement programs also have benefited the Marlboro Green family, which operates in the growing menthol segment. Marlboro Green's Flavor Makes the Night campaign expresses a different, more extroverted side of Marlboro to connect with the social menthol adult smoker. Using digital tools, age-verified adult smokers can locate Marlboro nightlife promotions. They receive tips from nightlife experts known as flavor makers on Marlboro.com and can enter for a chance to win a once-in-a-lifetime trip to the Marlboro Ranch in Montana. Recently, the brand expanded its menthol offerings with Marlboro Menthol Rich Blue in 28 states. Marlboro highlights Rich Blue and the Green family at retail, including through vibrant imagery designed to appeal to both loyal and competitive adult smokers. Collectively, these efforts have strengthened Marlboro's relevance, engagement, and share among adult menthol smokers. We've discussed Marlboro Black and Green, but each of Marlboro's flavor families efficiently and responsibly connects with smokers 21 and older, including through digital tools. By investing in mobile technology, Marlboro increased mobile logins tenfold since 2011. Although the details are proprietary, Marlboro.com mobile logins were in the millions in 2014, just to give you some perspective. And through our large proprietary adult smoker database, Marlboro.com continues to be among the leading CPG websites in average number of unique visitors. Investments like these have grown Marlboro's retail share over time, consistent with its strategy, and maintained its leading equity. In our annual review of brand equity done by the market research firm TNS, Marlboro outperformed key competitors again in 2014. These brand equity scores help us gain a deeper understanding of key aspects of brand strength. Importantly, Marlboro also maintains strong equity scores among adult smokers ages 21 to 29, which are both higher than competitors and higher than Marlboro's scores among adult smokers overall. In machine-made large cigars, John Middleton's Black & Mild brand continued to lead in the tip segment in 2014, growing its segment retail share about 2.5 points versus 2013 to over 91%. Black & Mild's performance also helped grow cigars' shipment volume over 6% since 2013. Middleton invested to expand the Black & Mild tipped franchise in 2012 with Black & Mild Jazz, which contributed to its strong performance. And Middleton is now expanding Black & Mild Casino nationally to further its momentum. Over the past 5 years, Black & Mild's retail share declined about half a share point annually due to competitive pressure, primarily from low-priced, untipped cigars. However, by innovating on its flagship Black & Mild tipped cigars and prioritizing profit ahead of share, Middleton continues to strengthen its position in the category. Before we leave the smokable product segment, a brief word on litigation. A comprehensive discussion of tobacco-related litigation is found in the financial statements we filed with our Form 8K on January 30th. Today, we'll touch briefly on the so-called Lights class actions and Engel progeny litigation. In 2014, we obtained dismissals of the remaining Lights cases that were pending in federal court. In state court, there are only a handful of such cases that remain. One, Aspinall in Massachusetts, may be tried later this year. In Miles Price, the Illinois Supreme Court granted review of the Fifth District Court of Appeals decision to reinstate the prior 2003 judgment. As a reminder, the Illinois Supreme Court already vacated that judgment once 8 years ago, and we believe that we have compelling arguments why that judgment should not be reinstated now. In the Engle progeny cases, we achieved substantial success in managing these suits, although there were some losses in 2014. Of the 9,400 Engle progeny claims originally filed in 2008, less than half remain actively pending, mostly in state court. In 2014, we obtained either a defense verdict or a mistrial in more than half of the cases tried. A federal appeals court affirmed the dismissal of almost 750 cases. We expect the Engle progeny cases to remain active for the next several years. So to sum up on litigation, in 2014, we continued to effectively manage the environment, although significant challenges remain. We'll continue to protect the interests of our shareholders by vigorously defending these claims. Turning to the smokeless product segment, USSTC's strategy is to increase income by growing volume at or ahead of the category and to maintain modest share momentum on Copenhagen and Skoal combined. USSTC owns the two leading premium smokeless brands. Copenhagen is the most masculine, iconic smokeless tobacco brand. In 2014, Copenhagen achieved 30.8 retail share points, and Skoal, which celebrated its 80th birthday last year, had a 20.4% share. The smokeless category is growing. From 2009 through 2014, USSTC estimates that category volume grew at a compounded annual rate of approximately 5%. In 2014, that growth rate slowed to about 2%. Despite a lower growth rate, USSTC delivered against its strategy. USSTC grew smokeless volume ahead of the category at approximately 2.5% when adjusted for trade inventory and other factors. It also grew combined retail share on Copenhagen and Skoal by 5/10 to 51.2%. And the smokeless product segment delivered adjusted OCI growth of 3.3%. USSTC also continued to invest in the equities of Copenhagen and Skoal to drive their combined performance. In 2014, Copenhagen continued to post terrific results. Despite investment in Skoal and competitive spending, Copenhagen increased its retail share by 1.5 percentage points versus 2013. Investments to expand the brand through Copenhagen Long Cut Wintergreen and Copenhagen Long Cut Straight have attracted competitive adult dippers to the brand and contributed to its strong share performance. Skoal introduced its new A Pinch Better equity campaign in 2014 that is generating strong awareness among adult dippers. Skoal reinforced A Pinch Better through successful equity-enhancing promotions and coupled the campaign with a plan to reduce price gaps between Skoal Classic and the leading discount brand in several geographies. Thus far, Skoal is showing signs of moderating its share declines. Of course, brands are strengthened and built over time, and we remain focused on enhancing Skoal's overall contribution. USSTC further supports Copenhagen and Skoal's brand equities, particularly among adult dippers ages 21 through 29, through mobile engagement. For example, adult dippers use their mobile devices to enter Copenhagen's Own the Hunt promotion. Similarly, Skoal garnered its highest numbers of sweepstakes entries for the 80 Days of Saturdays promotion, in part through mobile engagement. As a result of these investments, mobile logins among adult dippers of both brands increased 680% versus 2013. In both the smokable and smokeless product segments, we've invested in both our brand equities and our sales and distribution capability. In fact, over many years, excellent retail execution has been part of our success formula. This includes developing a leading sales organization and offering mutually beneficial trade programs for our companies and our trade partners. In our two largest categories, cigarettes and smokeless tobacco, our retail coverage model addresses 95% of total volume and includes approximately 240,000 stores. That broad coverage and a highly efficient distribution network translate into speed to market. In recent national expansions for Marlboro Edge and Copenhagen Southern Blend, our sales group achieved over 85% distribution in targeted stores in just 2 weeks, and more than 90% shortly after that. So it's clear that our sales organization provides a competitive advantage. So, our approach is to maximize these strong tobacco businesses while innovating for the future. Today, the performance of our large and successful core tobacco businesses helps fund our second long-term strategy of growing new income streams with innovative tobacco products while delivering on our long-term financial goals. Let's demonstrate how we do this in the context of the e-vapor category. First, from a category perspective, we estimate approximately $2 billion in e-vapor consumer spending last year, which represents compounded annual growth of 90% since 2011. That's an eye-catching growth rate, of course, though from a dollar perspective, $2 billion in e-vapor spending in the U.S. is very small compared with $86 billion in estimated total tobacco spending. But it's wise to invest in the promise it may hold. Second, adult smokers and vapers have a variety of performance, taste, and form expectations from e-vapor products. Given the relatively low rates of adoption in e-vapor, it's pretty clear that today's e-vapor products generally are falling short of fully meeting their expectations. Third, brand loyalty remains low and is a key opportunity. As proof of that, we need only remember that five different brands have claimed the title of being the leading e-vapor brand between 2011 and 2014. Our aspiration in e-vapor and other innovative tobacco products is to succeed in the long term. So that informs our judgment about how to proceed with dispatch, but in a financially disciplined way, always listening to and learning from the adult tobacco consumer. Products are an essential first step, as are distribution and brand building. We also believe that a portfolio approach is wiser than a single technology bet. So Nu Mark began by introducing Mark 10 e-vapor products for those adult smokers and vapers who want a familiar experience. Mark 10 has the look and feel of a cigarette and includes four-draw technology for a familiar draw. Over the past year, Nu Mark evolved Mark 10 based on feedback from adult smokers and vapers, adding, for example, an offering with 2.5% nicotine by weight and a personal charging case. Now, combining technology from Mark 10 and Green Smoke, Nu Mark is further strengthening its product portfolio. Adult vapers are seeking a longer-lasting battery, more flavor variety, and more value from their cartridge. In response, Nu Mark expects to begin shipping its next-generation e-vapor device, Mark 10 XL, into a lead market in the second quarter. Mark 10 XL has a larger format that delivers twice the liquid and battery life as the current Mark 10 and comes in four varieties: Classic, Menthol, Fusion, and Winter Mid. It also offers the familiar form, weight, and draw that many adult smokers and vapers prefer. Second, we've established Mark 10 e-vapor products as a national brand. Mark 10 is now available in over 130,000 stores, and the national e-vapor distribution platform we've built will enable future growth. Again, though it's too early in the category's evolution to focus unduly on share leadership, it's worth pointing out that Mark 10 ranked among the top e-vapor brands nationally based on market share as of year-end 2014. The Green Smoke brand, with its solid position in the online channel, adds further dimension to Nu Mark's portfolio. We've been very pleased with the adult tobacco consumer response to Green Smoke. Later this year, we plan to expand Green Smoke retail distribution and test new packaging and promotional tools, so expect more details on these plans in the coming months. Third, we're optimizing our supply chain to support our product portfolio. This is another area where Green Smoke has added immediate value. Through the Green Smoke acquisition, Newmark has improved its supply chain efficiency, diversification, and cost structure. In light of pending FDA regulation, Newmark is investing in a robust product quality system, which is validated by the strong feedback from adult tobacco consumers on MarkTen's quality and consistency. We've also brought our substantial regulatory capabilities to bear on the e-vapor category. This includes advocacy with the FDA and other stakeholders, encouraging states to adopt a minimum age for purchasing e-vapor products and establishing strict product standards. We're nearing the first anniversary of FDA's proposed e-vapor deeming regulation, about which the agency says it has received more than 135,000 comments. In our engagement with FDA and others, we've advocated that the final rule should include a common-sense approach to harm reduction based on science and evidence. We support an approach to regulation that recognizes differences in product types, creates a level playing field among diverse product types and trade channels, supports the right of informed adults to make choices, and encourages manufacturers to continue innovating to bring potentially lower-risk products to market. We believe the public health potential here is significant and that FDA has an unprecedented opportunity. E-vapor is, of course, but one aspect of the portfolio of innovative tobacco products we're developing. Our approach considers a range of products which may satisfy different adult tobacco consumer segments for different reasons and under different circumstances. That's why, for example, our companies are also executing their U.S. plans for Philip Morris International's next-generation platform products. This technology provides yet another alternative for adult smokers. It offers a familiar tobacco taste for adult smokers with no ash. We're supporting PMI in the research needed for a modified risk tobacco product application to the FDA. And we're also developing brand and go-to-market strategies, and we'll share more on our company's plans when the time is right. This work also is providing important learnings and building our capability to succeed in the new environment of FDA regulation of modified risk tobacco products. Also, with regard to our licensing and distribution agreement with PMI relative to e-vapor products, Newmark expects to begin shipping e-vapor products to PMI for the international market later this quarter. And we understand PMI will discuss these plans in more detail this afternoon. As you know, our core tobacco company's brands are leaders in the categories in which they operate. We have the same long-term aspiration for Newmark's innovative tobacco products. That's why we're investing in e-vapor and working with PMI with our combined decades of research and development on heat-not-burn products. Providing adult tobacco consumers with products that carry less risk than traditional cigarettes is not a new goal. But today, many of the elements are in place that are needed to help make that goal a reality. Adult tobacco consumers are interested in innovative tobacco products. The regulatory framework is now in place in the U.S. to assess whether a product is less harmful and to guide us in how to communicate with adult tobacco consumers. New technologies are showing promise. As adult tobacco consumer preferences continue to evolve, we'll continue to embrace the opportunities and the challenges of bringing them lower risk tobacco products. Finally, pursuing these strategies, maximizing the core while innovating for the future, demands attention to productivity. Through two large programs between 2007 and 2013, Altria reduced costs by approximately $2 billion. Today, we're continuing to streamline, balance, and invest. We're examining every opportunity to simplify our business, including redesigning more than 100 large and small processes from packaging development to budgeting. We're managing headcount carefully, cross-training and realigning people to where they're best needed. And we're investing appropriately in our priorities. For example, while we're working to improve e-vapor margins, we expect to continue making disciplined investments in innovative tobacco products. This includes investing in new product development, awareness and trial, and the regulatory science needed to advance our aspiration of bringing FDA-approved, reduced-risk products to market. All the while, we are continuing to pursue, and we have been delivering against, our long-term financial objective of growing adjusted diluted earnings per share 7% to 9%. Now I'll turn the podium over to Howard for a review of our final strategy and outlook for 2015.
Thanks, Marty. Our final strategy is to manage our diverse income streams and strong balance sheet to deliver consistent financial performance. Our diverse business model sets Altria apart from its peers and provides flexibility to support consistent earnings delivery. The strength of our tobacco business provides the foundation for our earnings results. In 2014, the combination of our smokable and smokeless product segments generated revenues net of excise taxes of over $17 billion and reported operating companies' income of almost $8 billion. Additionally, Altria's earnings benefit from our unique position in the wine and beer categories. As we'll reinforce at tonight's dinner, Altria owns St. Michel Wine Estates, a leading domestic wine producer, importer, and distributor. Its premium wineries include Chateau St. Michel, Columbia Crest, 14 Hands, and Stag's Leap Wine Cellars. Together, their wines received more than 180 ratings of 90 or better in 2014. In fact, the Wine Advocate recently awarded the 2012 Stag's Leap Cask 23 Cabernet with the highest rating in the company's history. St. Michel grew adjusted operating company's income 13.6% last year and approximately 13% on a compounded annual growth basis since 2009. So St. Michel has continued to deliver strong performance. This is a great business, if small, for Altria. As you know, Altria also holds approximately a 27% stake in SAB Miller. Equity earnings from our investment in SAB Miller have been a nice contributor to Altria's earnings per share over time. From 2009 to 2014, reported earnings from this investment grew at a compounded annual rate of 10.9%. In 2014, Altria recorded pre-tax earnings from SAB Miller of more than $1 billion. And over the past 5 years, the market value of our stake has grown at a compounded annual rate of over 12% to $22.5 billion at year-end 2014. As we've said many times, we regularly evaluate our SAB Miller investment, and at this time, we believe maintaining the asset is in our shareholders' best interest. Of course, we're also well aware of speculation respecting global beer consolidation and how that might affect our investment in SAB Miller. Our goal always has been and remains to manage this investment in a way that delivers the best value for Altria's shareholders. Historically, our financial service businesses has contributed to our diverse business model. Looking ahead, however, we continue to expect lower gains on asset sales from Philip Morris Capital Corporation, which has been winding down its operation since 2002. The net finance receivable has decreased from $9.4 billion in 2002 to $1.7 billion in 2014. We expect the income contribution from the business to be uneven going forward, as underlying lease income continues to decline and the opportunity for additional asset sales diminishes. In recent years, Altria has taken opportunities to restructure and reduce debt to enhance its balance sheet and credit rating. In 2014, $825 million of debt was retired. Altria also issued $1 billion aggregate principal amount in new low-coupon debt. As a result of these and other capital markets transactions in recent years, we've reduced our weighted average coupon rate from 9.1% at the end of 2009 to 5.7% at the end of 2014. And last March, Standard & Poor's upgraded Altria to BBB+. Our strong balance sheet supports our ability to return cash to shareholders through dividends and share repurchases. In 2014, as mentioned, Altria paid shareholders nearly $4 billion in dividends, and once again our board of directors raised the dividend, which currently stands at an annualized rate of $2.08 per share. We also repurchased nearly $1 billion in shares and had $518 million remaining in the current $1 billion program at the end of 2014. During the past 5 years, combined dividends and share repurchases totaled more than $21 billion. Both dividends and share repurchases are subject to the discretion of Altria's board. Looking to 2015, we begin the year by watching several dynamics. First, at the macro level, broad economic indicators in the U.S. are moving in the right direction. Adult tobacco consumers are seeing their economic conditions improve modestly, including due to the significant decline in gas prices. As Marty mentioned, PM USA has taken pricing actions and lowered promotional support behind some Marlboro offerings as it continues to balance maximizing profitability and share growth. So our businesses expect some modest improvement in 2015 due to the economy. Second, adult tobacco consumers continue to explore the options available to them. While cigarettes are by far the largest and most profitable tobacco category, the development of the e-vapor category is evidence of that exploration. Thus far, we do not believe that this exploration has significantly impacted volume in the cigarette category, which has remained stable over the past several years at an annual decline rate of between 3% and 4%. Third, I'll touch on taxes. The state excise tax environment has remained relatively stable for the past several years. State weighted excise taxes per pack of cigarettes have grown at a compounded annual rate of 4.5% since 2009. Thus far in 2015, 19 state and local cigarette excise tax increase proposals have been introduced. State budgets continue to face pressure, and changes are very difficult to forecast, so we remain watchful on this issue at the start of each year. In summary, our diverse business model and strong balance sheet have supported Altria's consistent performance over time. In 2015, we believe that our strong, distinct capabilities will allow us to navigate the external environment effectively and that we're well positioned to continue our track record of delivering solid EPS growth. Therefore, we reaffirm our expectation to deliver adjusted diluted EPS in a range of $2.75 to $2.80, representing growth of 7% to 9% from our 2014 adjusted diluted EPS base of $2.57. Now I'll turn the podium back to Marty for final remarks.
Thanks, Howard. In summary, in 2014, Altria once again demonstrated the consistent strength of its business. We believe Altria continues to be a compelling investment, offering both earnings growth and a solid dividend yield. We remain focused on consistently delivering strong shareholder returns. Over the past 5 years, Altria's total shareholder return of 230% outperformed both the S&P 500 and the S&P Food, Beverage, and Tobacco Index. Our position within the profitable U.S. tobacco industry makes this possible. No other company in our industry has the brands, the market leadership, and the talented employees our companies have. Our core tobacco business is strong thanks to investments we've made in the premium brand equities of Marlboro, Black & Mild, Copenhagen, and Skoal, which continue to sustain strong margins. We're innovating for our future, in particular by building a leading position in the e-vapor category over time. And through our diverse business model, strengths in one business can offset a period of softness in others, enabling Altria to deliver consistent performance. So thanks very much for your attention. Again, we look forward to seeing those of you here at dinner tonight, and now we'll gladly take your questions. Vivian.
Hello? Oh, there it is.
Oh,
sorry. In thinking about your Marlboro strategy, you guys have been unbelievably consistent in terms of kind of the communication around it as well as the execution on it. And I know you guys don't like to talk about individual lines within the Marlboro brand family, but can, at least in the architecture, the four larger brand families, can you talk about how the market share targets apply to each one?
Yeah, let me talk for just a minute about the architecture, and then Dave, you may want to comment as well. Just to get everybody regrounded, I know you're familiar with it, but others perhaps less so, is we have the four flavor families. It was done back in 2012 to try to make sure that a brand that's this big is being relevant in the most powerful way and continuing its status and momentum forward. It's been really successful, I have to tell you. Folks who are in the red franchise are happy to be in the red franchise, but you know the addition of black is the best example that we talked about in our remarks. We don't break the shares out at that level, Vivian, but we can tell you, for example, Marlboro Black, as I think we said, has been a great contributor, particularly among adult smokers 21 to 29. Its brand equity is strong, and I'll tell you, for our marketers, we've arranged our marketers to work in that architecture. They can do executions on Marlboro Black that, frankly, you probably wouldn't do in other parts of the franchise. So it's expanded the breadth, if you will, and it's expanded the freedom to innovate with the brand. All the while being faithful to its positioning, come to where the flavor is. Matt, and then I'll go to Judy.
Thanks, Marty. I wanted to stick on Marlboro.
Sure.
And just come back to the brand equity illustration that you showed earlier.
Uh-huh.
Can you dimensionalize how that's improved over the past several years as a result of the brand architecture and relative to a competitive brand like Camel, for instance, that's also receiving a lot of brand equity investment? How's it performed on a relative basis? And then lastly, just to stick on black, with the economic backdrop improving, I realize that the architecture goes well beyond pricing, but is that an area where we should expect to see a lower emphasis going forward?
Okay. So there's a lot there. Let me see if I can break that out. We do the TNS study every year. We have about 5 years' worth of data now, I think, in the last set I saw. And, in fact, Marlboro continues to improve over time. And that's important because, remember, it's improving off of the highest base. You saw the chart. It's higher than any other competitive brand, and it's actually been slightly strengthening over time. And that's hard to do off a high base. I would also tell you it has a high absolute score. So, for example, that's a brand equity study that's done across other CPG categories. It's a very high score on an absolute basis. It's a high score on a relative basis versus the competition, and it's an improving score over time. So if you look at what we've done with the brand, you know, Dave is always reminding us about how brand equity is built over time, and he's right. But you look at what we've done with the flavor family, what we've done on Marlboro.com, what we've done on mobile, what we've done on Marlboro Black. I don't think there's any question that that has come together in a very powerful way to improve the equity. Let me think what I'm leaving out. Over time, on a relative basis, and Marlboro Black. Fair? Okay, thanks. Judy.
Two questions. First, I guess if you look at the total tobacco category, maybe we've seen a little bit more cross-category movement recently. You've got smokeless tobacco that's slow down. You know, obviously the e-vapor is evolving pretty quickly. So can you give us your perspective on what are you seeing from a consumer perspective? Are we seeing more switching? Are we seeing more dual users or, you know, triple users in terms of the occasions? And as you think about your portfolio and really trying to adapt to sort of the change in consumer preference, how would you think about really being nimble and more quick to adapt to that situation?
Okay, I think the key answers to that question are that adult tobacco consumers are continuing to explore other categories. There's no question that smokers are exploring smokeless, for example, and they're exploring vapor. And there are dual, you know, with restrictions being in place the way they are, people are finding different products for different moments. There's a lot of that going on, even within the conventional space. And then clearly, as we point out in our remarks this morning, adult tobacco consumers are looking for innovative tobacco products, vapor being but one. We could talk about heat not burn. We have Verve in a test market. There continues to be a lot of exploration there. Strategically, what that means for us is a total tobacco platform, premium brands, great products. That's how we think about our business.
And then just related to the IQOS that you have a relationship with PMI, what are some of the milestones that you're looking at in terms of assessing the timing of the launch?
Well, I'll leave IQOS probably to the PMI presentation out of respect for them, but clearly in the U.S., one milestone has to be the submission of the modified risk tobacco application, and then hopefully its approval. Those will be the two big occasions. And meanwhile, as I said this morning, we're working very hard on brand positioning, go-to-market strategies, so that when we get those approvals, as I hope we will, we'll be ready to go to market. Michael.
Can you speak a little bit about the pacing of buybacks over the course of this year, and specifically if you've done any year-to-date? And then secondly, you've spoken in the past about Marlboro's ASU 30 share. Can you give an update on where that sits now?
Okay, thank you. This gives me an opportunity to get others involved. Why don't we do Howard and then Dave?
Sure. With regard to buybacks, we ended 2014 with $518 million left in our current buyback, and I think we've previously communicated that we expect to complete that by the end of the year, and we don't provide further detail on pacing.
Dave, you want to talk about adult smoker?
Smoker share. If we go back to the Marlboro architecture that was put in place in 2012, we have seen positive results on the total brand and on Marlboro Black.
Questions? Nick?
Thanks, Marty. Just one quick question on the licensing to PMI. How will that be recorded on the P&L, just so we get a sense of where it'll be when you guys report?
Howard?
Yeah, I think in the end, it'll be part of operating company's income, but it won't be broken out in any specific detail.
All right. And then the broader question, you know, clearly, Marty, price realization has been a big part of the EPS algorithm and obviously the stock price. And I know a lot of folks in this room are always wondering, you know, how high is high and, you know, how far can this go? So, you know, I don't think anyone really has the answer, but maybe you can just give us context on two things. Number one, on special blends, how much more promotional reduction is there left? And number two, if you could just give us some context in the high price states on, and if Marlboro is still gaining share in some of those states, maybe that can just kind of conceptualize if there's still a lot more opportunity left.
Yeah, I'm going to come at that just a little bit differently. If you let me to do that, I'll try to get to what you're asking about. You know what? I was reminded the other day when I was looking at Marlboro pricing around the world, actually what the price structure is in the United States, and it's a reminder to us here, actually, that there's pretty long runway, I believe, for pricing overall. I mean, golly, you know, price of a Marlboro in the U.K. is probably $13 U.S., and Switzerland $9, and so forth. So I do think that there is room for pricing there. You know, Special Blend, as you know, was brought out and promoted, you know, as high as a dollar a pack during the terrible recession to make sure that folks in the franchise had a place to go. You see, we've taken it down on average 13 cents in certain geographies. That's always that exquisite balance between keeping modest share momentum on Marlboro while always trying to maximize income. And, you know, our talented folks at PM USA have very highly developed tools to try to model just what that is. But it always starts with an orientation towards income. And when you say high price states, I guess you're talking about high excise tax states. Yeah, high excise states, they're always a special challenge, obviously, if you go to states like New York. And the real problem there is what you see in international markets, which is a lot of the volume just doesn't go through the regular retail chain. So it's awfully hard to measure.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Chris. And then I'll go Bonnie.
Thank you. Working here? I had a question for you, please, on Marlboro as well. And, you know, you have used new varieties, new extensions for that brand, and we haven't had much help in the way of substantial equivalence. So just understand your pipeline there and if you have more to come throughout 15. And then related to that, Marlboro Rich Blue, I believe, is it across roughly half the U.S.? Is that intended to go across the whole U.S. in 15?
Okay. Maybe I'll take the pipeline question. Dave, you want to say a word about Rich Blue? Okay. So our pipeline remains robust. I'll say what I said about this every time somebody asked me back in 2007, 2008, 2009. We were pretty planful about what the environment might be like. I also think, Chris, it's going to pick up. Substantial equivalence approvals, I think, have to pick up from the agency. We communicate with them regularly, but we've got a full pipeline. Dave, you want to talk about Rich Blue?
Yeah, with Rich Blue, we introduced Rich Blue in approximately 22 states in the Northeast, East, and South. And as far as future plans, wait and see. And knowing me, I consider it competitively sensitive, so wait and see. Remainder of this year.
I knew he was going to say that, so watch this. I'll say something to give you something more. It's a great product. It's off to a great start, and we'll see, but when we have great products that are off to a great start, you would expect that we would try to maximize the investment. Okay, fair? Bonnie.
Thanks, Marty. You mentioned a portfolio approach in vapor is better. So as you look out over the next several years, how do you envision building this portfolio? Will it be mainly organically, or will it be via acquisitions or some combination? And then could you give us a sense of how full your innovation pipeline is right now in vapor? Certainly, you mentioned you're rolling out Mark 10 XL,
yep.
But is there more in the pipeline?
Sure. Thanks for that question. I'm actually very encouraged by what we have in the pipeline. You know, we had a lot of work underway to support Newmark, and then with the Green Smoke acquisition, one of the reasons we really like Green Smoke is they really have good ideas for the pipeline. That product, as you know, has been very well received in the marketplace. So between the two of them, and there's a lot of space there right now, I'm very encouraged about the pipeline for vapor. You saw the announcement this morning just about Mark 10 XL. I think that's what you've written about it, right? That's what we should expect. People are going to be innovating to give folks the products that they want. Listen, we have terrific R&D capability. And we're working hard on things, but we're not so vain to think that we have cornered every great idea in our space. And so we're open always to new ideas. And if they make sense to tack on, you know, we're open to that.
Okay, thank you. And then can I just ask another quick question on the potential for future NPM settlements, where you guys stand with that? Is there room for more reaching some settlements with additional states?
Boy, that's a complicated topic. I'm loath even to go into NPM. Just by the time I level set anyone, it'll be lunchtime. So, look, if there's always the possibility that the other states may resolve, and everybody's, I know, trying to work hard on that, it is a very complex situation with the attorneys general in the states, as you know. We're not interested in litigating matters like that over the next 10 years, and we've only, I think, dealt with, what, Howard, 2003 so far? So, I don't know, Murray, do you feel differently about it?
No, I think you're exactly
right. All right, Murray supports my observation. That's a very complex situation, and it's going to take some time to unravel. Thank you for that support, Murray. Well done. Yeah. Other questions? Ann.
Thank you, Marty. I have two questions. One, talking about the MST category and the slowdown we saw last year,
yeah.
Realizing they're dual adult consumer users and some of that's trial. Just curious your thoughts. If you think it's a permanent slowdown in trend, if there's enough data to make any kind of decision right now, and how you're thinking about that as you build out models for the next couple of years for MST.
Okay.
And then the second topic is if you think about the combustible portfolio, where do you look at white spaces if you'll share that? Is it geographies, pricing? You've done a lot of innovation across the Marlboro portfolio. So if you can help me think about where there's opportunities for growth.
Sure.
In that area.
Two good questions. Listen. When we showed the chart that, you know, the CAGR, I think, for MST growth over the last years was about 5. And then about mid-year in 14, it slowed down, and for the year we estimate about 2. I think, you know, it's kind of what was behind Judy's question, which is they have more choices now. So you do see people moving between categories, and they do explore. I think 2 quarters for us is probably not enough data to know. What I would tell you, though, is we've noticed the data point, we're monitoring it carefully, and we naturally have contingency plans in place versus our plans if it turns out that the slowdown is something more than two quarters, as you would expect. The way we think about white space and innovation is always to look at our portfolio, look to see if there are opportunities that were under-indexed or underrepresented, and that we can put a product in that would help us to modestly improve our position in the combustible space while not getting in the way of our long-term financial goal to maximize income. That's kind of how we think about it.
We do have time for one more if there's one more question.
One more. We have this gentleman right here.
As a large SAB shareholder and representing your shareholders, and you nominate representatives to the SAB board and their various committees, how active or passive are you in all of the brouhaha and discussions that are going on now within the beverage world with SAB and Heineken and talk of others involved there in possible combinations and permutations of joining up?
I knew I was going to get an SAB brouhaha question. I think the answer is we have three board seats there. Howard has one. They participate actively on that board, as you might expect they would, to fulfill their fiduciary duties to SAB. And I think Howard was pretty eloquent this morning in saying how we think about it, which is we're always looking out for the Altria shareholder. We will do what's best for the Altria shareholder. And but in the last several years, of course, been a terrific investment, it's performed very well. But if you've been following Altria for any period of time, I hope you would know that we're ready for all scenarios, and we'll do what's best for the shareholder.
Let's leave it there then. Thank you, Marty.
All right,
thank you, Altria.
Chris. Thank you for your attention, everyone.
Tonight as well. Thank you. Altria will be in the breakout room as well for some further Q&A.